Hi everyone, my name is Kira Proctor and I am the Managing Director at the A. Proctor Group for those who haven't seen our previous podcasts. So welcome back to the Proctor podcast. We are recording here at our head office up in beautiful Perthshire in Scotland in our very own pod, which normally is filled with staff members and their cups of tea, but today it's all ours. So I'm sitting here with a couple of colleagues, Will Jones and James Brackenreed Johnson. So if I can just ask them to introduce themselves, that would be fantastic.
Hi, yeah, my name is Will Jones. I look after the business development team here at the A. Proctor Group. And yeah, I'm pleased to be here in the pod today in a very blustery day outside in Scotland, in sunny Scotland. But, yeah, thank you, Kira.
Thank you, Kira. Yes, my name is James Brackenridge Johnston. I now head up the facades for the company.
Fantastic. Thank you, guys. And today our episode is going to be all around value engineering and what that really means within the construction industry. So perhaps one of you can just explain briefly, I mean, in general, what does value engineering really mean?
Tough one. I think it depends. Value engineering is in everyday life, right? It's not just the construction industry. And I think there seems to be, depending on who you're talking to, is it just to save money? Is it just to try and cut costs? And what does that mean as well? I think in general, it's like a systematic and organized approach to providing the necessary functions in a project at the lowest cost. But yeah, I think in construction, we do tend to find that it seems to be pushed towards how can a project manager or indeed a buyer potentially save money on a project. And that's not always, in my opinion, good. I know we'll get into the nitty gritty in a bit more detail shortly, but value engineering should be getting value simply on a project, not just cheapening a project to try and save money or hit certain budget, you know, within a certain budget.
Well, I was going to ask, so what's the difference between cost cutting and value engineering then?
Well, cost cutting is a very simplistic term in my eyes. It's really just how can we try and take some money off that bottom line, whether it be trying to look for cheaper products or whether you're trying to do things more simple on site to maybe save money on the actual install itself. Labor, I guess, is what I'm talking about there. Whereas I think value engineering should be more aimed towards how can we make this better, this project better? Where can we cut costs? Because it's something you should look at. You can't just decide, oh, we've done it and it's a great project, it's worked really well, we've done everything perfectly, we won't look at value engineering. It's obviously something that should be on every single project. Mm. But for me, it's making sure that you're not devaluing that project at the same time by just simply saying we'll just use worse products, cheaper products, that type of thing.
Hmm. I mean, I think from a architectural point of view in regards to value engineering, you know, they are carrying out the engineering for that project. They're integrating specialists, engineers, structural engineers into that project in order to make sure that the correct materials are specified. They integrate manufacturers into that specification to make sure that the materials that they are working with, that they are selecting, are going to do the job, and ultimately the building will perform how it's meant to perform at the end of the build and during its life process. The problems that we face, obviously, in relation to value engineering is when the project gets to tender, that from a contractual basis, if they haven't got the time or they're utilizing a spreadsheet analysis, then these projects are priced not taking into consideration the performances of the products that have been specified by the architect. So what we really need is the consideration of the time that needs to be spent looking at these specifications in order to make sure that the specifications are adhered to by the contractor, which will aid and abet them at the end of the day, because one, they'll price it correctly so they won't have to value engineer in the worst meaning of value engineering, as in to cut costs out of the project, and therefore have stumbling blocks during the construction stage. And ultimately, at the end of the day, if they do that at the beginning, at the end of the day, they're potentially not going to achieve, so to speak, their air tightness line, moisture holdout line within the building envelope. Obviously, from construction, it caters for all areas of the construction. But from our perspective, we're very interested in the facade.
I think the problem I have, James, sometimes is people don't understand enough about what it is they're trying to value engineer. it is looked at, as I said earlier, it's quite a simplistic way of looking at it. If you're just saying, oh, we can buy a cheaper product, for instance. But if you don't really understand what that product's doing and to why it's been specified, be it a particular type of insulation or a particular type of membrane in our instance, you need to have a good understanding, a good level of understanding as to what effect that could have. So you're not just going to say, right, we'll swap out A for B because it's saving me some money. You need to understand what else that could do to that project or that specification. And sometimes that's not always the case. It's difficult to do that. And you are trying to get people to know or understand a hell of a lot about every single product that they specify. And that can't be easy. So looking at it from that aspect and trying to take my Proctor head off for a second, if you kind of... expecting people to understand every single little bit of nitty-gritty about every single product, that's never going to happen.
No. I mean, that's why, again, from an architectural perspective, when they leave certain aspects out of the specification because it's a D&B contract, because they're going to novate, then they're expecting that main contractor to design that themselves, whether it be working on site with the subcontractor or whether they've got their own design team in order to do it. So that is value in engineering. So it's value in engineering as opposed to value engineering, but it's the value in the engineering that we need to make sure it's right. I mean, again, you're right in regards to material choices. You know, from a specification point of view, people still put in, still put in the fact that a breather membrane, a VCL, because that's the line that it goes in, but they won't specify which membrane it does. Therefore, they've got nowhere to go. So it's about relationships. And people's understanding, and thankfully, obviously, over the last 7 years, people have got more of an understanding now of the fact that breather membranes are part of a facade system, VCLs are part of a facade system, and therefore the specification of those membranes needs to be taken into consideration.
I think you hit on something there with the installation as well. I think it's important that that's taken into account. It's not just, doesn't affect a membrane as much unless you're looking at like a fully salvaged membrane and what that could bring. But if you're looking at the likes of a steel frame system, sometimes you're looking at the detail, depending on every single particular project, it could differ between how different the centres are on a steel frame. Mm. And that can have a massive effect on a building. What does that do to your window details and your reinforcement around there? Mm. And in the first instance, you'll be thinking quite simply, well, if I've got less metal, it's gonna save me lots of money on the outset. But actually, that might not be the case on the end-to-end. Mm. And that's where I kind of think that certainly has to be an end-to-end sort of view when you look at value engineering. What exactly is that going to do to my design, my detailing, obviously, and eventually my installation, not just how much money am I going to save if I swap from one to the other.
Yeah.
That obviously puts quite a lot of onus from a technical perspective on not just the specifier, contractor, but also the manufacturers in the industry in terms of supporting, you know, the product performance, how that affects the building holistically, to make sure that a value engineered solution is effective and will achieve what the building is going to do. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think there has to be trust, especially between all parties. So it's not just, although it is a good sales tool, you know, as a manufacturer, we can help you value engineer your project, come and talk to us about what products you're using and maybe we can help in certain areas. But there has to be that trust of it. It's not just a case of, I'll talk to us, we'll do you a deal and save you some money. So I think there is a lot of onus, and there should be a lot of onus right through, but it has to hit every stage, and not just the manufacturers, your designers, your architects, and also your installers, to so everybody fully understands exactly what role they can have on that sort of potential value engineer from a product and a design point of view.
And where, I mean, again, I hear an awful lot in the industry around software and the importance of software being used to calculate how many materials are needed in a building. Software to see, again, how that building performs, to see what products are required in it. Is that something you guys tend to come across a lot in the architectural base when you're out and about talking to them face to face?
Yeah, I mean, the integration of the use of software in architectural practice is definitely increasing. Because, you know, with having the drawings in a cloud that the main contractor can see, that the architect and the contractor can work on at the same time, if there's a detail that needs to be dealt with on site, but obviously the architect is 50 miles away, 100 miles away, whatever it may be, then they can both go on from a design perspective and have a conversation in regards to the detail that they've been working on. So, you know, like looking at the golden thread side of things, understanding the building that you're working on, understanding how that building is going to be used, understanding for the occupants of that building how that building is functioning, what it's made of, is becoming more and more paramount within the industry. And it's based around digital software.
So, yeah, so, I mean, what about BIM? Is that going to be helpful during this process?
Yes, I mean, BIM and Revit and sort of the forms that are out there at this moment in time are all very useful, because it's digital information that people can utilize. I mean, from a standard specification perspective, there's MBS, which obviously you can caption the information from the manufacturer and add it to the specification. But BIM and Revit obviously allow that from a modeling perspective. BIM and Revit allow the architect and contractor to utilize accepted detailing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the likes of BIM was designed to speed up that process, which speed is part of value engineering, right? You've kind of got not just cost, but speed.
I think it's a development it's a constantly evolving, I mean, it's engineering, it is a constantly evolving aspect of design. And so if it ever stopped or stalled, then that's when there's a problem. You've got to constantly develop and constantly sort of grow and advance in regards to your engineering and your understanding of engineering in order to make sure, you know, it's not the days of bricks and blocks anymore. People are using modern methods of construction. People are using light gauge steelwork. People are changing. And the understanding from a air tightness perspective, it's more aware. From a moisture control, moisture ingress perspective, people are more aware. From a fire perspective, people are definitely more aware.
In terms of the concept of productivity, I mean, that's got to be an important factor. So far we've really covered materials, we've talked about software, we've talked about specification and technical expertise. Productivity on site must come into this. So it's all well and good looking at something on a drawing, switching something out for a more cost-effective material that does the same thing, for example. How is the productivity on the labour taken into consideration on site to make sure that all these things are kind of lined up?
Yeah, it's a difficult question. I think, obviously, it's extremely important, especially with the as we understand it, how expensive labour is. It's more expensive than it ever has been. So if you're going to change anything or try and value engineer anything, it has to sort of focus on making sure it's not going to be detrimental to the installation process, especially for speed, for time. If you're going to increase an installation on site by quite lengthy periods because you've gone for a slightly different detailed design or product, then that could have a massively negative impact on that value engineer. But obviously, when you look at just the price of the products, that's you could still see a benefit. But when you're looking at from the entire project cost, then that's really where you've got to obviously make sure that the value engineering has been done, with a kind of over, what's the word I'm trying to say? An overarching perspective of the project.
Through all, yeah.
I think that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, you can't have good, fast, and cheap.
Yeah, I mean, from a labour perspective, obviously the volume of labour on site, the amount of product on site, is established by the specification for the product requirements on site. So if you utilised a hygrothermal assessment and that hygrothermal assessment gave you the ability to negate the internal VCL, whether it's because there's a convoluted internal line, whether it's a low moisture risk inside the building, that will save you time and money from a labour perspective and also from a product purchase and installation perspective.
I think also when you look at installs on site, how many conversations do we have where the actual installer, the labor on site, is not happy because there's been a change in the way he or she does their day-to-day job, whether it be plastering a wall, whether it be installing a membrane, whether it be like you mentioned earlier, going from bricks and blocks to steel frame. There's potentially, you need buy-in from everybody throughout the process.
100%, yeah.
And that's not always easy.
No.
And look at some of the conversations we've had over self-adhere membrane.
Yeah.
You know, in the first instance, it's because it's different. There's sometimes a bit of reluctance to look at something like that. But, you know, 9 times out of 10, we'll go back and the conversation's very much, oh, actually, this is easier. This is quicker. This isn't what we expected. And that can be difficult because someone might see the benefit, others might not. So value engineering, it has to have that buy-in across the entire across all its investors.
Absolutely. And it's quite interesting. I was reading about this the other day. If you think back to where the whole concept of value engineering started, it was during the Second World War, and it was General Electric. So essentially, because of the war, there were shortages in materials and certain finished products. So what a chap did, and I can't remember his first name, it was somebody Miles, he basically began with a sort of creative team-based approach, which allowed the teams to all come together and put forward different products to achieve the same end product. And that's kind of where it all began. So I think your concept, Will, about it being around teams definitely comes into it, and the whole functionality of that team and the creativity they can offer with looking at different options with a very open mind is hugely important. And something at times that the construction industry isn't renowned for, if I'm honest. You know, we are quite set in our ways. So I'm glad that this whole concept has been brought to the forefront, because it does allow a lot of innovation and innovative thinking around, you know, building solutions, which is fantastic for a company like Procter Group, because we love that stuff here.
Totally. I think that's really important as well. I think when you look at value engineering, what it can also lead to, the answer may not already be there, but it might ask the question, well, why can't we do something like this if there's only a product that was able to do this for us, or a way of install that could speed a particular type of installation up, if we had this particular type of technology, be it, as mentioned earlier, be it sort of CAD, for instance. How quickly did that sort of improve timescales of design and also machinery to cut stuff on in factories? You know, that's all value engineering. How can we make this quicker? How can we make this easier? So yeah, I think it's
and how can we do all that avoiding additional cost? Is a huge part of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that additional cost being, you know, looking again at the whole picture of what it might cost us more to implement this, but how much money is it going to save us? And when we offset that, overall, is there going to be value in that and a cost saving?
I guess as well, the lifetime of the building is going to come into this, because it's all well and good value engineering the project. I guess it's going to be an important role for the, you know, the consultant, the surveyor, or the part that the building owner, to actually look at the long term effects of decisions made before it's even on site.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Actually, that's a really good concept when you think of that. We talk about this whole overall picture of a project, but different parts of that project have different sort of stakeholders at any one time. So a designer is going to want to be able to do their design as quickly, as efficiently as possible. They get that done and out of the way, and then we're moving on to, you know, the concept of actually building whatever we're building, and those builders are going to want to do what they're doing in a particular way to save money for them. And then how can that impact potentially the building owner, for instance, when that's handed over, be it a supermarket, for obviously one of the big supermarkets, how's that going to affect their ownership of that building moving forward? So it's quite interesting to think of it like that, because actually you'd probably end up not really worrying about what the other party wants and worrying about what you want and how you're going to end up saving yourself and value engineering your own particular part of that project. And that holistic approach probably is missed, you know, and the client at the end of the day probably has to drive that. They need to know exactly what they want from this. And then that has to go back down the line, right back through from installation down to design, to make sure that changes aren't being made that's going to affect the outcome, the end of the overall outcome of the project. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, having built my own house, we did a fair bit of value engineering ourselves, to be honest. A lot of negotiation as well between my husband and I about who wanted what. But you're right. I mean, we tried to look at the performance of the whole house, and, you know, even decisions such as the windows. Dependent on the thermal performance of the windows we choose, we had to, I had to reassess, you know, a particular look of window that I really, really liked, but the performance just wasn't up there. And also the price point was out, of course. So I think it's, you know, the client becomes very important. What's important to them? How does that affect how they're going to be utilizing the building, what they're going to be doing with it? and decisions day to day, but they have to be informed decisions. I mean, I think I was lucky enough that I was in the industry and I understood the negatives. For example, something like a window or door. If I had put in the windows and doors that I really liked aesthetically, the overall performance of the house from a thermal point of view would have been absolutely terrible, because of course you lose most of your thermal performance through things like not well performing windows and doors. Mm-hmm. So I think my concern is if the client, who's ultimately sometimes making these decisions, isn't adequately educated or doesn't have the support from their architect or from the contractor, from the people that are educated in the industry, it can end up with quite bad decisions that can affect a lot more than we realise.
Yep.
So I think it's important for the education piece to come across in the industry, that people really understand the consequences of some knee-jerk. And I still like those windows and I have regrets, but I'm also very happy to be warm in my house. So
you have to ask the question why, don't you? I think that's important as a client. Why? Why are we doing this?
It's one word. It's communication. It's, you know, that communication has to occur from all different parts of the project. So from the client through to the subcontractor, through to the chap wheeling the bin out. Why is he wheeling that bin out? Because that's what's working on the project. From the communication side of things, in regards to communication on site, is getting better. You know, a contractor comes in, does his job, leaves. Whatever happens to the product system that he's installed, doesn't care about. He's done his job, he's off. But then you've got the following contractor that sticks a load of holes through it, that goes, oh, actually, no, those holes don't need to be there, so I'll move my product somewhere else. But doesn't seal up those holes, doesn't make good on what he's done, because it's going to be overlaid by another product anyway. So that's where that communication needs to be. And that's what does happen now, in the fact that, you know, these questions are asked on site. The main contractor, the site manager, God bless Clerk of Works, comes and has a look, and basically understands before this product gets overlaid, we need to make sure that it's absolutely up to specification. Because once you've overlaid it, they're not going to see any damage. So therefore, they'll carry on overlaying and overlaying with the forthcoming layers. Then you'll do your test, whether it be air tightness, whether it be water holdout, whatever it be, and it'll fail. Because there hasn't been the care to that material in that substrate prior to being overlaid, because the communication wasn't there.
How to upset a load of contractors in 2 minutes?
Not really.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of contractors out there that probably do care.
No, there are. No, 100% there are. I mean, I've worked, I mean, even from a brickwork perspective, you know, the brickworkers going through membranes, through sheathing boards, were aware of the performance of this material. And because they were puncturing it, the main contractor put the ownership on them, saying, look, you are puncturing this.
Yeah.
The air tightness, if fails, because we've done that interim air tightness test. If it fails now, because you've done what you've done,
yeah,
then ultimately we'll be looking at you. So they stood up and listened.
It's back on that level of understanding, isn't it? And that's really key to all of this. You know, any changes that are being made are understood, but also not being scared to ask the question: how can we make this better?
Yeah.
What are we doing wrong? How can we value engineer this project? And it is essential on every project. I think we can all agree on that. Value engineering isn't just a cost-saving exercise and just is a means to save a bit of money.
Yeah.
It's essential on every project.
Yeah.
I agree. I think one of the challenges, Will, is when it comes to value engineering, it's a widely accepted and encouraged practice. However, I think it comes down to the stage during a project when it's done. So unfortunately, what we do see is that value engineering tends to start taking place when projects are running out of money. So instead of being done at the planning stage, which is ideally where you want to see it happening, people are trying to make last minute changes or last minute kind of economy savings to save a bit of money. And, you know, the term value engineering is still made, and we see it all the time, you know, specifications trying to be switched out, things being done differently to try and cut some corners at times. Mm. So I think the concept really needs to be kind of ingrained in the minds of people in the industry that this has to take place during the planning stage. And that's where it adds the most benefit, not towards the middle or end of a project when, you know, people are frantically trying to change things to save time or save money on materials.
Yes, that's interesting. I think when it's used for budgeting purposes, although people are going to be screaming, well, it's always used for budgeting purposes, that's what it's for. But when that budget is now sort of taking control of that project, because, as you say, it's maybe over sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? A project's overspent, and we're trying to claw back some of that. That's when it gets quite tricky. It's not to say that it shouldn't be used in that circumstance, because obviously it can be quite important. And also, if value engineering is done correctly, it's probably important that that is done at that stage, because we are running out of money. What do we do? Mm. Where can we? I hate to use the term cut corners, because that's exactly what I'm trying to avoid. But where can we try and value engineer this project? So I think it is important at that stage. But you're 100% right. It's got to be done earlier on. You can't just go in at, right, we want this, and this, and then you've gone far the other way and overspent on a project, and then you're kind of trying to claw all that back. You've got to understand, and I think that's what we've been trying to say, you've got to understand what you're doing when you're value engineering a project.
You're not
just swapping one product out for another because it's cheaper, with the differences that makes, but also to the specification. It is a good point, because the specification might be, it needs to be at this level, be it fire performance, as you mentioned earlier, James. And you can't, well, you did. You know, you've got to make sure that the, I forgot what I was going to say then. The products that you're looking to value engineer,
got to have the same performance.
It have got to be at the same performance,
It was what I was going to follow up with what you said anyway. But it's definitely about that. I mean, that's, you know, the true meaning of value engineering is not replacing a product with a cheaper product.
Correct.
The value in the engineering is the fact that you understand exactly what's going on within that build-up. It's been specified in a particular way for all levels to be achieved. That's the value in the engineering. And obviously how you afford to do that, whether it's chopping materials out for equally approved materials, is fine. But when you start cutting corners, as you say, William, in regards to reducing down outgoings, then that's when it becomes a problem.
What about if a product's been over-specified? I'm just thinking here. We come across that quite a bit, right?
Something's been over-specified. Yeah, but this is why manufacturers are here, is to assist on site, is to assist a specification, is to assist a design manager.
Yeah.
In order to make sure that if the product has been over-specified in regards to, you know, it's oversailing where it needs to be massively, and therefore over the whole build it's going to be like, you know, hundreds or thousands of meters of extra material, then yes. But again, that's why we're here. But that's the value in the engineering, is the fact that we can come in and survey, have a look, and obviously reduce material if required.
Sorry, no, please end on that. That's the value in the engineering. Finish.
I think really it's around reducing costs without sacrificing quality or functionality of that building. So yeah, Will, you asked about if something's over-specified. Absolutely. I mean, if it can achieve, if a less expensive alternative, be it material, be it method, be it process, can achieve the same thing and the same outcome which it's trying to achieve, then that's really kind of the definition of value engineering. That's what we're looking for. So that was a really good conversation around value engineering and just our general thoughts on it. So I want to thank you both for being here, and thanks very much to our listeners. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. We have more to come, so keep your eyes peeled. And we hope to hear you or see you again soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Kira. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Kira. Thank you, everyone.